All right, y'all, welcome to the Scott Horton Show. I'm the director of the Libertarian Institute, editorial director of antiwar.com, author of the book Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, and the brand new Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism. And I've recorded more than 5,500 interviews since 2003, almost all on foreign policy, and all available for you at scotthorton.org. You can sign up for the podcast feed there, and the full interview archive is also available at youtube.com/Scott Horton Show. All right, you guys, first time in a long time here. On the line, Adam Kokesh. How you doing, Adam?
Outstanding. It's an honor to be interviewed by the legendary Scott Horton.
Yeah, yeah. Anyway, so you guys know Adam. He was a Marine in Iraq War II, and then he joined Iraq Veterans Against the War, and he's had a show on RT, Adam versus the Man. And is that still the name of your YouTube show now, Adam versus the Man, or not?
Yeah. Well, oh man, I'm so past YouTube. Oh my gosh, it is GovTube now. I'm a big fan of Odyssey, mm-hmm. and Telegram and anything that's decentralized and blockchain based. But you know, I built my channel up to 100+ million views and 250,000 subs, and it's a weird thing to say. It should be a lot more, but just over the last 7 or 8 years, the shadow banning on YouTube and the direct censorship, where like I basically am not allowed to talk about COVID, it's obscene. And I'm glad that the internet is evolving to the point where I can connect with people directly. Yeah. I think Telegram is a big tool for that.
Yeah, I mean, sooner or later, I don't know what's taken so long, but sooner or later, all of these, you know, Twitter.com and Facebook.com is all going to cease to exist, and everything's just going to be a standalone app that has blockchain, yep. interaction, whatever, yes. this, that. I don't know the code, but you know what I mean.
Yes.
It's going to all be,
yes.
like that.
Yes, a decentralized protocol for social media communications, yeah. that you can control your connections to. And see, this is why I think Telegram needs to evolve a little bit more. You know, it started as a charity project, essentially sponsored by someone who just wanted to pay for it because he wanted it to exist. And it became a good private secure, I mean, as secure as you can be. And that's, you know, with an app to begin with, kind of messaging app that was great for groups. But when a lot of the alt-righters and, Chris Cantwell types got banned on social media like 4 or 5 years ago, they went to Telegram because you can have channels also that people can just follow. So mine is t.me/Adam versus the Man. And I want people to follow me there. I really believe that might be the big, not the ultimate transition you describe, which I do believe in, that there's going to be a decentralized blockchain social media protocol. But until then, and what's going to be good for a long time, and I think is harder for them to sabotage right now, is Telegram. And I'm very hopeful for Odyssey as well as a potential bridge out of this really choked off, censored. I mean, it's just like we went through the internet's infancy, and then there was a golden age when I was active and building my channel and it got really big. I was doing 2 million views a month pretty consistently and getting paid $6,000 on YouTube before it got bought by Google. And then it was all downhill for me and a lot of other independent media producers. And so we went from that internet golden age of independent media to this very censored, controlled phase that I hope is coming to a breaking point around all the COVID bullshit. And that this transition using Telegram, using Odyssey, and I'm not being paid and I'm not endorsing them, but I think that those kinds of apps and platforms are going to be a very critical bridge right now.
Yeah. Hey, that's cool. And I got to tell you, man, I got 5,500 something interviews I've been posting since 2003. And I've always been way like years behind the curve on getting them out, you know, versus, you know, out by way of the podcasting and getting my archive up on YouTube and all the different things. I'm years behind the tech on all that. So I need to talk to my guy about that. But anyways, hey, listen, you're here because I was on Dave's show, and we were talking about why we let soldiers off the hook a little bit from our scorn compared to cops. And the way I remember it, you did not object that cops are wonderful. It was just that the soldiers, in fact, contrary to what I was saying, and I guess Dave was agreeing, that they can't really quit, or at least it's much more difficult for them to quit, certainly compared to a cop, and how that is kind of one of the factors that makes us kind of hold it against them less, that they're doing even more violent action on behalf of the state. And of course, we're also bringing up other factors like kids are recruited very young, before they know anything. And, you know, cops are picking on their own people in their own towns, which is an extra layer of despicable, even if the night raid is not quite as violent. Things like that. But anyway, so you objected and said, hey, that's not right. You can quit the military if you want. And I thought, you know what? That's really right. I know that that's really right. And I didn't want to give anybody the wrong impression about that. And I had to bring you on, just like you were saying, I think, so that you can tell people exactly how they can quit the military. Because as you might imagine, there are quite a few people, not just veterans, but active duty military people who listen to this show on a regular basis.
Yes. Well, let me address the sort of ethical condemnation issue first, because it is a very important one. And we do generally, as libertarians or as ethicists, look more favorably on soldiers who sort of don't know better and maybe are naive. We think of them as being gullible and being lied to and sucked into it. But you could just as well say the same about cops. And I think what's more important to parse out is the intent. There are people who join either the police force or the military because they just want to leech off the system. You know, they just want to have a good job, and they, you know, they think it's an honorable thing, or they can, you know, lie to themselves enough to go, okay, well, I'm getting good dental coverage out of this deal, and they don't really care. And there is a certain disgustingness of the moral equivalence of that. That's almost worse than saying, I believe in what we are doing and I am well-intentioned, because I had no ill will in my heart. I had some really bad ideas. I had some deep-seated problems that led me to enlist in the Marine Corps, you know, like Full Metal Jacket. I wanted to be the first kid on my block with a confirmed kill. And I look back and go, man, that might be sadistic. You know, and there are cops who, like, you know, one of my favorite comedians, Kyle Kinane, says, well, they were paying $5 an hour more than the post office, and I get to carry a gun. And he goes, I was almost that dude. You know, I could see myself in that position. And that's not morally condemnable as much as the cop that we libertarians like to focus on, who's the asshole cop who's like, I got beat up as a kid and now I get to wear a badge and hide behind this institution and I get to take out my insecurities on other people. And that's the bully cop. And fuck that guy up and down, left and right, forwards and backwards, every day of the week. Absolutely. But that guy's in the military too. There are guys who join, and it's a smaller minority. And it's less in your face, and we're kind of isolated from it. But in the Marines, you know, there's a small percentage. There's a handful of guys like that, and there's a little bit of that in a lot of people. And I have to admit that was part of it for me too. At least I'm looking for an excuse to do something brutal, but I'm looking for an excuse to make it righteous. You know, and that's kind of sick too. And so, to your more important question about getting out at any time, I want to start with plugging a website that I always send people to who are the real experts about navigating the exact current legal circumstances that you may be facing in the military. And it's GIRightsHotline.org. GIRightsHotline.org. Everybody listening, even if you don't care, you don't have to go read the website. You should write that down. I say pull it up on your browser, bookmark it so you don't forget. I have it in my Google keyboard on my phone. So when I put in GIRightsHotline.org pops up automatically, because I text it to so many people, messages on Twitter, Instagram. Hey, I need help getting out of the military. I need help dealing with this legal challenge in the military. I want to get out as a conscientious objector. I disobeyed this illegal order, this thing that I thought was wrong, and now I'm in trouble with my command. You need someone to talk to navigate the exact legal circumstances. That's it right there. GIRightsHotline.org. GIRightsHotline.org. But I do want to acknowledge the objection to my point. And I think it's really important. What you said is even more important, that we don't want to give people the wrong idea that, oh, well, you're in the military, tough shit. You know, you got to keep following orders and murder babies if that's what they're telling you to do. No, you don't. Absolutely not. And so as someone who can say, please learn from my mistakes, learn from my experience, learn from what I figured out. You know, I tortured people, and I did it. I was on a civil affairs team. I went to Iraq. I volunteered as a reservist to go on active duty and specifically go to Fallujah with a civil affairs team to be on the front lines and to do something righteous that I thought was rebuilding the country. And I was definitely disillusioned of that during my deployment there.
You tortured people. How broadly are you defining that term when you say that?
Well, I'm being pretty inclusive, but what I did was...
You're saying you helped besiege Fallujah, or you actually brutalized a prisoner?
Both. So, first, in the bigger sense, I was the party to the war crime that was the post-invasion occupation of Iraq. Specifically, I was part of the siege of Fallujah. My six-man civil affairs team was attached to, I think it was Mike Company 2-1, and they were responsible for the siege in the first battle of Fallujah in April 2004, after the four Blackwater guys got strung up and burned on the bridge, the northern bridge over the Euphrates. We were there. I ran a checkpoint during the siege of Fallujah when we had the city cordoned off and surrounded. And then specifically myself, I was ordered filling in for the grunts to guard detainees who were just trying to escape the city while it was being shelled. And they had their hands zip tied behind them and hoods over their, like, sandbags over their heads. And they were sat cross-legged on a cement floor. Now, if you do that to someone for a few minutes, you could say, okay, well, that's just sort of, you know, handling detainees. When you're forced to sit in that position and not allowed to go to the bathroom for an extended period of time, that's torture.
Yeah.
And so I wasn't told, hey, you're going to be in a detainee handling role and you're going to do enhanced interrogation and here's training. It was just like, well, this is what we do. This is how we handle detainees. You civil affairs guy, you're filling in for the grunts now because they're doing other shit. Guard these detainees for a shift. You know, and I used my Arabic to taunt them and keep them in that position. They were not allowed to sleep, to nod off. They had to sit upright, or they would be, you know, physically abused. So I wasn't doing Abu Ghraib level shit. And for me, I mean, I kind of have the excuse that it wasn't thoughtful. It was sort of in the moment. Oh, yeah, go guard these detainees. Okay, I can guard detainees. Okay, here's your instructions for guarding detainees. Wait a second. But I can't even say that I thought really to resist. I can make that excuse for myself, and say that, you know, well, it wasn't torture because of this or that. But no, it was. It crossed that line. Absolutely. And I want to take responsibility for that. And I wish I had. And I even could have done it in a way that kept me from directly disobeying orders. I could have been like, hey, isn't this inappropriate based on what we've been told about the Geneva Conventions? And even just verbally resisted. But it didn't even occur to me. So absolutely, I was culpable and a willing participant in a war crime and in having a direct hand in torture myself. Does that make sense?
Yeah, it sure does.
And
besides your personal experience there, which I don't mean to interrupt, you can go on and say whatever you want to, but I think it's important the way that you include just holding people, not even necessarily in a stress position, but just... hell, just sitting down in handcuffs all day long, unable to move, and then all day and all night, and then what, all day again, this kind of thing, out in the hot sun, that, hey, at some point early on in that process, that does count as torture, man.
Well, you try just sitting cross-legged on a hard floor and not getting up. I mean, your legs are going to go numb in like 5-10 minutes. These guys had been there for at least hours. This was at night. It was in the guard shack next to the northern bridge by the Fallujah General Hospital, which is on the peninsula of the Euphrates on the west side of Fallujah. And they had been there long enough that they were already, you know, covered in their own, or at least, you know, they've gone to the bathroom on themselves.
Yeah. I interviewed a guy who was a military policeman who almost arrested H.R. McMaster for exactly this going on at his base at Tal Afar under his authority back then. And they just swept that right under the rug. But this was the exact kind of thing, leaving these guys out there in the hot sun for so long. And covered, as you say, in their own mess and the rest of this. And then, as you say, you know, brutalized too, which means, you know, at least kicked or whatever if they start slouching, right?
Yeah, and in my case, I wasn't, I mean, I, again, trying to make excuses for myself, right, or contextualize for moral, you know, absolution. I didn't physically brutalize them. I just sort of poked at them with my rifle, you know?
Yeah,
it was all that was needed.
Yeah,
because guys before had done worse.
Well, look, I mean, so, that's Iraq War too, in a very small microcosm. But you could just, you know, add water, and it's the same thing writ large too.
Yeah, you know? Yeah. So I want to acknowledge the why it seems easier that as a cop you can sort of quit at any time, but there are also contracts, there are restrictions, there are other things. Whereas in the military, when you find yourself in combat, if you are in combat and you have that moment of waking up, yes, it is harder. But when you're stateside, at any time, you can say, I want to be a conscientious objector and I'm not going to deploy. And you will not deploy.
Is that what you did?
No, I wish I could have. I did not. I didn't really wake up until I got out. I have some token of sort of active military resistance I can claim, but it was like when I was in the inactive reserve, they came after me for, quote, protesting in uniform for the street theater action in 2007 with Iraq Veterans Against the War. And the Marine Corps came after me trying to strip me of my benefits and downgrade my discharge for, quote, protesting in uniform. Uh-huh. And we kind of wrestled that to a tie. It's a long, dumb story, but that's how I first became a significant public figure as an anti-war activist.
Yeah. Hey, y'all, check out my new book, Enough Already, Time to End the War on Terrorism, at enoughalreadybook.net. Early reviews are that people either think it's hilarious or they get so angry that they put it down. But it's the Iranian Revolution, the 80s Afghan War, the Iran-Iraq War, Iraq War I, Iraq War I and a half, and then Afghanistan, Iraq War II, Somalia, Pakistan, Libya, Syria, Iraq War III, Yemen, and all the special operations wars throughout Africa in the aftermath of the war in Libya. It's all there for you. Might change a friend's mind. Enough Already. Time to end the war on terrorism at enoughalreadybook.net. Hey guys, Scott Horton here for ExpandDesigns.com. Harley Abbott and his crew do an outstanding job designing, building, and maintaining my sites, and they'll do great work for you. You need a new website? Go to expanddesigns.com/Scott and save $500. Hey guys, check out Listen and Think audiobooks. They're at listenandthink.com and, of course, on audible.com. And they feature my book, Fool's Errand, Time to End the War in Afghanistan, as well as brand new out Inside Syria by our friend Reese Ehrlich, and a lot of other great books, mostly by libertarians there. Reese might be one exception, but essentially they're all libertarian audiobooks. And here's how you can get a lifetime subscription to Listen and Think audiobooks. Just donate $100 to The Scott Horton Show at scotthorton.org/donate. All right. And then, so tell me more about what you know about actual conscientious objectors who've gotten out, and how difficult it's been for them, or what other advice that you can give to people in the military who might be looking for a way out of there.
Yeah. So the process varies a little bit from time to time and branch to branch and individual to individual, unit to unit, situation to situation. But this is where, again, GIRightsHotline.org is an incredible resource that will walk you through exactly what you need to do for your circumstance. Mm-hmm. And they aren't designed, I mean, the military is not set up to make this easy, obviously.
Well, give us some examples. Like, what might that look like? Having to go through the, which is filling out a form and then waiting 2 weeks and then filling out another form? Or what are we talking about?
Kind of, yes. And they are going to bully you, and your officers might ridicule you, and they might try to, you know, some verbal bullying, and they may, might put you on shit duty while you're waiting for the process to go through. But I would say the first thing to do is call GIRightsHotline.org. Go to the website. There's an 800 number. You can call and actually talk to someone, and they will and explain your situation, and they will tell you how to initiate the process. And it might be a form that you give to your CO or your unit clerk, and that initiates the process. And it's a series of interviews and forms you have to fill out, and you're going to have to talk to the chaplain and make a statement that your beliefs are true and deep held and not fleeting. Mm-hmm. Sincerity. It's like a statement of sincerity. And so I don't pretend it's not my job. It's not my mission to keep up on those legal details and walk dudes through this. A lot of guys ask me for recommendation letters that go into their conscientious objector package that will say, you know, Adam, I believe in Adam's perspective, and Adam will testify that his perspective means this. And so I've submitted that about a dozen times, but it's not even necessary. Some guys just like going, ha, I got my CO status with a Kokesh letter on file. You know, that's a cool thing for them.
That's
it
cool.
Might help. It might not in some cases. It's definitely not necessary, but it's one of those things that bolsters the case of sincerity. But you have to be ready, one, for them to draw out this process, that they might make it take months. They might make it take, I've heard of some take a year, but you won't deploy. You won't go to combat. You won't go on any kind of combat mission once you've initiated the process. And I've never heard of anyone who's persisted through it be denied. So they will slow it down. Yeah, and you will keep getting paid, and you will keep getting housed as a member of the military until they discharge you. They can give you shit duty, they can give you shit hours, but whatever it is, they can't take away those basic rights and privileges. I don't say rights, because you don't have any rights when you're in the military, you know, but if you tell them, hey guys, I don't want to play anymore. I'm not going to do this. I object morally to being a part of this institution. I want out. You can do it.
Because at some point they don't want your ass after that anyway, right?
Yep, exactly.
Which is fine.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that's good. And listen, you know, there's been a lot of guys who've done it. And, you know, fortunately, fewer and fewer GIs are seeing combat these days. There's still special operations forces, you know, all over Africa and whatever. But we don't have these large scale. And hey, there's still 6,000 guys in Iraq, you know, and a few thousand in Syria and whatever. But nothing like what we had at that time, at least.
To help evacuate the embassy. Saw that headline today.
Yeah, exactly. People were saying, oh no, they're re-escalating the war. I said, yeah, no, that's for the fall of Saigon. That's all.
hopefully.
Yeah, I mean, and it sucks because there's a lot of Afghans and a lot of Americans and a lot of other people been through hell over there for what amounts to no reason at all after all this time.
I love the title of your book, Fool's Errand, speaks so well directly to that. But if you don't mind, while I'm here, I want to plug a couple things.
Yeah.
First, I got a new nonprofit called Homefront Battle Buddies. We have a great website called homefrontbattlebuddies.com. And our mission statement is to create a community of veterans through online organizing and in-person retreats to facilitate veterans helping each other pursue alternative therapies and transition to civilian life. So we get to be a federal nonprofit while doing just facilitating with our funding officially. But what are we facilitating? Hey, vets getting vets stoned in the woods, experimenting with mushrooms and MDMA in a serious and safe therapeutic setting where there's a brotherhood of veterans able to get that therapy that is being denied from us. And eventually, we want to be the tip of the spear in ending what's left of the drug war as well and say, look, you want to tell us that we fought for our freedom? We fought for your freedom? Well, why not respect ours for a minute when we want to medicate how we see fit? Really? You're going to lock me up because I'm doing psilocybin with other veterans and I'm not hurting anybody? Good luck getting away with that and getting reelected. You know, we're going to play that card. And to some degree, either with this organization or with this organization being a facilitator, we're gonna push this. And what I want to do with this organization is build it over the next few years so that we can make these services available in 10 regional camps with 4 campsites each capable of running simultaneous retreats all over the country so that every veteran in America who wants this experience can get it. And I say over 20-ish years, because I think we can do it. We can really meet the complete objective of this tactic, this set of tactics, rather, and make sure that our generation of veterans is empowered so that we can, as activists and as participants in politics and in our communities and in the economy and as entrepreneurs and in the world at large, make sure that the world learns the lessons of our experience so that we can be the last generation of combat veterans the world ever knows. So, I don't know, Scott, any questions or suggestions or thoughts on that before my last thing, the website, homefrontbattlebuddies.com?
No, I just want to thank you, man. I think you make a great role model. I sure hope you do. I know you have in the past, and I hope that that this interview helps get through to a few people. I have had people, you know, I've done a lot of traveling just in the last few months here, and I've had, you know, at least a solid handful of different people tell me they were going to join the military, but they didn't because of this show. And then, of course, plenty of people who told me that they quit the military because of this show, too. But I really like the ones where, like, man, I was about to join, and then I listened to this, and I was like, nah, man, I can't be part of this shit. So it matters. And look, I've always thought, and you can tell, the show is not geared toward people in Washington, D.C. The show is geared toward regular people, and I never thought I could really change the way things are. But I know for a fact from the very beginning of doing radio that I can get through to individual people in a way that matters to them, and that'll be good enough for me. And so those kind of examples are my favorite of those, though, you know?
Well, the last thing I want to plug is this show. As someone who does independent media on my own, and you can find me, whatever, our website's under construction, AdamVersusTheMan.com. I know that what Scott does takes a lot of commitment. And like you said before, he's got how many episodes under your belt of in podcasts?
5,560 something now, 70 maybe.
I'm not even on episode 300 or 700 yet of Adam versus the Man. And I look at that number and it's just like daunting, insane. I mean, your commitment is unquestionable. And I hope that you and your audience are able to make the base expand with this show, because it can be extremely powerful and it can be extremely effective. And I want everybody listening to realize that this technology, this ability to broadcast and communicate and have these conversations is great with Scott hosting the show, but it means nothing without a deliberately, conscientiously engaged audience who aren't just conscientious of consumers of information, but help make the marketplace of ideas better for everybody so humanity can realize the benefits of these ideas that we know are so fundamentally important to human progress. So share this episode. If you didn't like me, share one of his other episodes. Do what he does, or whatever you can to support this show. And if it's not this show, find something that is, because advancing humanity through more enlightened conversations like this is absolutely critical. And people like Scott deserve your support. He has proven himself to be principled, committed, and to have the endurance so that, you know, when you support his show and you're investing in him, that investment is not going to be wasted on somebody who's fly by night or just somebody who's here because they want to get famous. Scott is here for the right reasons, and his voice deserves your support.
Ah, that's really nice as hell of you. All right, so GIRightsHotline.org, and how do people find you and your great show, Adam?
GIRightsHotline.org, GIRightsHotline.org, GIRightsHotline.org. First and foremost, pull it up, bookmark it, save it on your phone somewhere. Be ready to give that to everybody who's thinking about getting out of the military. You can find me at AdamVersusTheMan.com. And if you want to get involved with our nonprofit, Homefront Battle Buddies, BattleBuddies.com.
All right. Well, your internet broke up right when you said that. AdamVersusTheMan.com and BattleBuddies.com. Is that right?
Homefrontbattlebuddies.com. I live in the boonies and I live in a third country. So, you know, Verizon.
Gotcha. Yeah, no problem. No, it works fine for 90% of the thing or more. So it's great. All right. Well, thank you again, Adam. Great to talk to you, buddy.
My pleasure.
The Scott Horton Show, Anti-War Radio, can be heard on KPFK 90.7 FM in LA, APSradio.com, antiwar.com, scotthorton.org, and libertarianinstitute.org.